Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bad Bleeps of the Bible. Yes, hello again, and welcome to Bad Bleeps of the Bible. It has been an incredible month celebrating women, celebrating all of the untold stories of the amazing women from the Bible with you. And we are wrapping it up this month with our very first rerun. So listen, I found out that most recently was the Jewish holiday of Purim. If you don't know, this Jewish holiday really celebrates the story of Esther and her salvation of the Jews out of the clutches of Haman. It's typically a holiday that's celebrated on the 14th day of either February or March. You do lots of different things, lots of customs and traditions, and you read from the book of Esther, and you give food to friends, you celebrate, it's festive meals, it's a lot of fun. But again, it's all inspired by Esther. And Esther is one of my favorite stories from the Bible. She's an incredible bleep who saves her people, who goes and risks her own life for the sake of her peoples. And I think that's a story that's worth retelling because she truly is a woman from history that we should celebrate. So, y'all, welcome to the very first rerun. This is the story of Esther. So, all in all, the Bible has had many different authors, and we think there are about 40-ish of them throughout history. Evidence is still lacking, though, in women authors of the Bible. In fact, there are only two books of the 66 books of the Bible even named for women. What's cool today, though, is that we're actually telling the story of one of those women. So settle in for a story filled with vengeance, hangings, beauty contests, harems, and one courageous and cunning bleep, Queen Esther. All right, our story opens with King Ahasuerus throwing an epic feast to celebrate a recent victory and to flex the huge and vast power of his kingdom. A little bit about this kingdom. It was known as the Achaemenid Empire, but in much more user-friendly terms, it's known as the first Persian Empire. And you may recognize that Persian Empire, since we see it in so many movies today, including 300 and The Prince of Persia, obviously. This empire was real, and it was real huge, running from India to Ethiopia and consisting of over 127 provinces. What else was huge was King Ahasuerus' feast to celebrate his giant kingdom. In fact, the feast lasted 180 days. That's 180 days of an all-you-can-eat buffet. And as the text says, was meant to show the riches of the king's glorious kingdom and the honor of his excellent majesty. But when those 180 days were up, he wasn't done. After that feast, King Ahasuerus had another one for everyone in the palace, great and small, for 7 more days. And this, I guess, was a way to say thank you for all the hard work of the past 180 days. And during these 7 days, we meet the king's wife, at the time, Queen Vashti. And I know this is a lot to happen at the beginning of a story, but just bear with me because it really does serve a purpose in setting the stage for all that's about to happen later. So we have this feast that lasts for 7 days, and Queen Vashti was actually having her own private feast for all the women in the royal house, separate to everyone. And it's here, unfortunately, that misogyny enters the chat. Because on the 7th day, King Ahasuerus commands his 7 lords, side note, the Bible loves the number 7, truly its favorite number. So he fetches these 7 lords, and he asks them to go get his wife Vashti and bring her to his court. Now listen, he wanted to bring her to his party not because he wants the pleasure of her company, no. He wants to show the people and the princes her beauty, for she was fair to look on. Vashti, rightfully so, was over it. This probably wasn't the first time that the king has pulled this crap, and she was most likely also sick of men undervaluing her true freaking worth and objectifying her just for her looks. I wish we could say times have changed for women, but here we are. So her reaction then was to refuse. She said, "Not today." And the king, as with any man when they're told no, was extremely wroth and his anger burned in him. And of course, the advice from all the other men in the room when they saw this slander was thus. They said, "You can't let her get away with this, sire. Everyone is going to hear about it. And soon, all the women are going to get ideas that they can rise up against their husbands and find out how truly independent they are and how, and they don't even need a man to complete them. And we can't obviously have women in power." And friends, this is why I love telling the story of our bleep today, because by the end of it, we're going to see who really has the power. So once these lords have completed their misguided diatribe, they advise the king that the best course of action is to remove Queen Vashti. But not only that, remove her and banish her from the kingdom. And this will set the stage for what they can do next, which their idea is to hold a contest amongst all the provinces to find a more obedient, submissive, and most importantly of all, stunning woman that will teach women everywhere the consequences of disobedience toward men. King Ahasuerus obviously thinks this is a great idea and banishes Vashti. So that's our stage. Again, apologies for the heavy intro, but it's worth it. And in fact, it's now with this contest to find the new queen that we meet today's bad bleep. Esther. So after Vashti's removal and the announcement of this big old beauty contest to find the next queen, each province gathered together all their fair young virgins, unto the palace and presented them to the king with the hope that the king would look at these women and choose the one that pleased him the most. It's during this time, then, that we meet a Jew in King Ahasuerus' court named Mordecai. Now, Mordecai was a captive, and he had been taken from his home and captured by the Persians. But Mordecai actually, despite this situation, was able to rise in the ranks of the court and was really in a respected position. And Mordecai had in his charge his cousin, whose parents had passed, and this person, his surrogate daughter, was Esther. And the Bible describes her, of course, as fair and beautiful. And Mordecai gets an idea. Since Esther was fair and beautiful to look upon, he thought it would be a great idea to also present her to the king for this contest. But not letting anyone know that, one, Mordecai is her cousin slash dad, or that, two, she is a Jew. And he does just that. So we have Esther presented to the king, who I imagine was so overwhelmed with her beauty that he just becomes instantly smitten. However, he couldn't just choose her yet. There was still a process that needed to be happen. And the Bible lays out this entire process for us. And this whole thing takes a year, 12 months, the Bible says. And if you're wondering what could possibly happen in these 12 months to prepare for this beauty contest, well, we have an answer. So for 6 months, all the women were purified with oil of myrrh. For another 6 months, they were purified with sweet odors. And then throughout the entire process, they are purified with other things. So lots of things are happening while these women were getting ready for this beauty contest to happen at the end of a year. But finally, it was time for the women to be presented to the king. The women, including Esther. And when I say presented, I mean one by one, they went to the king where he got to know each girl. And who knows? Maybe they had a great philosophical conversation where they discussed politics, business, and everything else women are better at than men. I wish, but I think we all know what was going down in those chambers. But finally, finally, the time had come for the king to make his choice. And his choice was Esther. So here we are. Esther is queen. She has not revealed that Mordecai is her cousin, and she has not revealed her Jewish heritage. But she is queen of the greatest nation on the earth at this time. And I wish we could just stop the story right here and say, yes, the end, beautiful, let's move on. I'm so happy that she is queen. But unfortunately, it's here that our villain enters. And our villain has the most villainy name that really should make him easy for you to remember. This man's name is Haman. Maybe you can remember, like, I hate Haman. Who knows? But Haman enters, and he is the newly appointed chief to the king, the top dog, the close confidant to King Ahasuerus. And this position has clearly gone to Haman's head, since he basically pranced through the palace, making everyone bow to him. No matter who they are and no matter their station, they were bowing to Haman. But there was one person who would not bow, and that was Mordecai. He clearly, Mordecai, had had enough of Haman's stupidity and just blatantly refused to bow. Now, this would have been fine and well and good if Haman hadn't noticed. Unfortunately, Haman noticed. And this ticked off Haman to the max. And he demanded to know who would perform such insolence and not bow. And then Haman found out that the person not bowing, Mordecai, was also a Jew. And it's here that his wrath became insatiable. Haman hated the Jews, and I can't put it strongly enough, hated. We don't know the reason why, but he hated the Jews. So much so that this insubordination of Mordecai's was the last straw, and he could only see one course of action that he must take. Haman decided that for Mordecai's insolence, he would seek to destroy Mordecai and all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus. He obviously couldn't do this right away. He couldn't eradicate an entire group of people just willy-nilly and on his own. So he needed some power. He needed some oomph behind his proclamation. He needed the king to decree it. So this little rat went to the king and said, and I'm going to try to do my best villain voice here. You know what? Maybe I should get a little drink of water. Here we go. So little Haman went to the king and said, King Ahasuerus, there are some people in your kingdom whose law and ways of life are just so different from us. In fact, they don't even keep your laws. They keep their own. And this can't be so, because you must rule everyone everywhere. So if it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed. And truly, in a moment of pure buffoonery, the king agrees. He takes his ring off his hand and gives it to Haman in order for Haman to seal the decree with his own ring, basically saying the king has decreed that this should happen. So with one word, Haman has issued the genocide of the entire Jewish population within Persia at the time. Mordecai, obviously distraught that one, he and his entire peoples would be erased from the face of the earth, and two, thinking that he was the cause of this eradication, gets incredibly distraught. Mordecai becomes so distraught, in fact, that he puts on sackcloth and ashes and screams and cries throughout the middle of town. Now, if you don't know what sackcloth and ashes are, this is a really favorite phrase of the Bibles to show extreme mourning. So sackcloth is a cloth made from, obviously, a sack. and ashes are what you're thinking, the ashes of a fire. They would put on sackcloth and throw ashes on their head to show that they are in such a state of mourning. Obviously, everyone would be upset seeing this, and everyone was upset seeing Mordecai in this state, but none more so than his cousin, the queen. But again, no one knows that Mordecai and Queen Esther are cousins. So she must communicate with Mordecai through a messenger. And through that process, she begs him to tell him what's wrong. He then confides in her what has transpired with Haman and how the king has ordered the eradication of him and his people, which would include her. I imagine, though, that despite Mordecai's distress in this moment, a little light bulb goes off. Remember, Queen Esther is in power. So he begs Esther to go to the king and to make supplication unto him and basically out herself as a Jew and request him to save both her and her people. To save she and her people. Her and her people. It's one of those two. I can't remember which one. Regardless, she wants to go to him and ask for him to save her and her people. And this, friends, is actually a huge ask. No one just goes to the king unannounced, not even his queen. In fact, the Bible tells us that all the king's servants and all the people of the king's provinces, including the queen, do know that no man or woman shall go unto the king into the inner court who is not called. There is one law of his. And if so, if they go, the law is to put whoever does that to death, except such to whom the king shall hold out his golden scepter that he may live. Boiling that down in case you missed it, if you go to the king unannounced and you just walk into his inner court, you are put to death unless he holds out his fancy golden scepter, and then you will live. Esther understood this danger and hatched a truly incredible plan. So here we are. Haman has ordered the destruction of the Jews, and their one and only savior is Queen Esther. And this and the following events is really where Queen Esther not only shows her bleep factor, but she shows her shade factor, and I'm so ready to tell you. So, Esther commands Mordecai first to gather all the Jews in the city and start fasting and praying, basically giving her the courage, knowing that all the people in the kingdom were praying and fasting for her. And then she says one of the most iconic lines from the Bible that you should definitely know and which I will quote for you here. She says, "And so I will go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And, here it is, if I perish, I perish." Now, I'm saying this line is iconic because I could swear that I was watching VeggieTales when I was little. If you don't know what VeggieTales is, please go to YouTube and find it. But I could swear I was watching VeggieTales, and I remember hearing this line from their story of Esther. I really hope that I'm not just hallucinating that, because I swear it happened. But what I do remember specifically is that once I learned, if I perish, I perish, I would run around my house all the time, and if my parents ever told me to do something, I would say to them, "No, Mom, I will not go to the Wednesday evening Kids for Christ service, and if I perish, I perish." Little Gaby Scott was wild. Okay, back to the story. So the time comes for Esther to approach the king. Remember, nothing is guaranteed right now. If no scepter is held out, Esther will be put to death. Slowly, I imagine, Esther puts on her royal apparel, takes a deep breath, and makes her way to the court of the king. And from the Bible we read that, "And it was so, when the king saw Esther, the queen, standing in his court, that she obtained favor in his sight, and the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. And so Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter." So she had done it. She had survived. The king, though, was obviously a little shocked and asked why Esther had come to him and what requests she had of him, for if so, that it shall be given to her with along with half of the kingdom. So clearly he really liked Esther. And I love this next part, so buckle in. Instead of just saying what's happening, how Haman is a douche, and how his ordering of the killing of all the Jews would also kill her and her people, she instead says to him, "Hey, if you're good with it, King, I want to throw another feast, another party, honoring your close confidant Haman and all his good work for the kingdom. And at the end of this party, I would just have one little teeny ask of you if you would be okay with that." So shady. I'm obsessed. So he does it. The king orders a feast in Haman's honor. A 3-day feast, in fact. You can't just have a 1-day feast, clearly, in King Ahasuerus's domain. Haman, of course, the little nasty, was so thrilled. He pranced around the palace with a glad heart, the Bible says, and invited all of his friends, family, and wife to this feast. He told them all about how he had been promoted and how he'd been given the ear of the king and how he was the new favorite and how the queen wanted to throw a party in his honor. And lastly, he decided that this feast was going to be such a great occasion that the only thing that would be the cherry on top would be the death of his enemy Mordecai on the following day after the party. So he had some gallows made. If you don't know what gallows are, it's where they hang people. He had some gallows made that were 50 cubits high. The Bible loves a cubit. Just know that it is about 17 to 19 inches. And to save you from doing that math, the gallows would be about 73 feet high. Also, he could show off the murder of Mordecai. Soon, it was time for the party. Day one goes great. Day two, wonderful. Haman is at his peak. Day three comes around, the final day of the party. Everyone's having a great time. The musicians are playing. Belly dancers are belly dancing. There's stuffed pigs and pigeons, I don't know, and massages. I have no idea what's happening, but we do know everyone was laying around on those couches eating grapes, is what I imagine. But so as we near the end of the party, the king finally remembers that they were here not only to honor Haman, but also because Esther wanted to ask him something. So he quiets everyone down, chills out the musicians, waits for silence, and then asks the queen what she wanted. And this bad bleep stands up in the middle of this party and with vehemence and power states, "O king, if it please you, spare my life and the life of my people. For there is someone, an enemy, who seeks to kill me and my family." Mic drop moment. The king, of course, answers her saying, "Of course I'll help you. Who is he and where is he that is trying to kill you?" She turns at this point and points her finger directly at Haman saying, "Him. The adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman." So through this speech, she has single-handedly revealed herself as a Jew, pointed out that Haman is the enemy, and planted the blame squarely at that little toad. And the king, being the king, sees absolute red and rushes to the garden to let out his anger and really collect his thoughts. And you can imagine what happened within the party. Probably whispers, chaos. I imagine it got loud. People are yelling. And in that chaos, Haman, of course, is freaking out and rushes to the queen to beg forgiveness. He throws himself at her feet, crawls onto the bed where she was laying, and is begging her prostrate, saying, "I am so sorry, I didn't know." And it's right at this moment that the king returns from his absolute blow-up in the garden. Of course, he sees this little rat, Haman, begging Queen Esther, laying on the same bed as his beloved queen, and freaks out and orders him to be taken away to the prisons immediately. It's at this time that one of the king's wise men, another confidant, just casually whispers to the king that Haman just had some 70-foot gallows built, and how it's a shame that those gallows would just be unused. The king agrees, and in front of the party, Haman's family, and our bad bleep Queen Esther orders that Haman should be hanged upon his own gallows. On the following day, this happens. The gallows that were meant for Mordecai, I should be smiling so much at this, but whatever. The meant for Mordecai were used to hang the wicked, wicked Haman. So it's because of Esther's bravery that her entire people were saved. We should also celebrate the fact that once again, an underestimated woman saved the day for the entire nation of Israel. And her story ends powerfully, because not only did she save her people, the people actually were elevated and received permission to, one, defend themselves, follow their own rules, and have their own province within Ahasuerus' kingdom. And there's also a nice little moment where Mordecai is actually elevated to the office of Grand Vizier, which I cannot say without picturing Jafar from Aladdin, which was the same office that our friend Haman held. And then at the end of the Book of Esther, we find that Esther is treated as a near equal to the king. Wow. The savior of her nation and the destroyer of her enemies in the most satisfying of ways. I am so happy to have told you the story of the extraordinary bleep of the Bible, Esther. I really hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Please feel free to get in touch with me and share your thoughts at badbleepsofthebible@gmail.com and Instagram at badbleepsofthebible. Sources for today's episode can be found in our show notes, and please rate, review, and subscribe. My goal is to read each and every review to make this show the best that it can be. Catch you next time, and watch out for 70-foot gallows. Bye!